You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 501, The Superboy Chronicles, Clark Kent, the grooviest guy in Smallville. Welcome to episode 501 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I'm Paul French, taking it solo this week as Victoria Day, lad. It is Victoria Day here in Canada, which means, our U.S. listeners, that it will be Memorial Day in a mere 7 days. So there you have it. I believe that's the way it usually works anyway. It's usually the week after. At any rate, so weren't able to do our usual recording last night, so I'm taking care of it today. And we're going to actually get right into it. Oh, actually, one thing I do want to cover, and thanks to our friend Boston Moss, who pointed out that in all our talk about Courtney last week, we neglected to mention how one could get in touch, and so there you have it. So we're going to take care of that right now, provided Google responds quickly. So you can head over to clordney.blogspot.com, and all the stuff is there, just basically all the contact info, etc. And so you can there you have it. So yes, clordney.blogspot.ca, actually. Yeah, there you go. There you have it. All right. So maybe it's try.com. I say that purely because I think it defaulted to blogspot.ca because I'm accessing it from Canada. Yeah, clordney.blogspot.com. It sounds like they both get you to the same place. So victory. All right. Let's get into the... Let's just get right into it, okay? I actually spent a bit of time getting caught up on Supergirl yesterday. Not caught up. We're getting to caught up. I watched it with the girls yesterday. And again, like they look at the Legionnaires on the show. They were this was the one where or we watched the first two that we watched yesterday were basically where Mon-El had just got his new costume. Or which was apparently his new old costume, and showed his expertise at cape fighting. That's one I don't remember, but hey, why not? Anyway, I'm enjoying the way the Legion functions in it. I'm even liking Brainy. I like that they kind of went quick into getting covered with the what do you call it? The image inducer. You know, it was the old Nightcrawler thing, you know, same sort of thing. And I like that he, you know, went out to get something at the store, and that was what finally made him think, okay, I just need one of these things because it's a pain. And the makeup person must have been like, yes. All right, so and I think the actor was probably quite relieved as well. Anyway, so moving on to the issue at hand, and this is New Adventures of Superboy number 26, and this had a cover date of February 1982. On the cover, we have Clark Kent riding a bicycle, and we have people shooting at him. Looks like various gangsters, even a hunter over here, and yeah. And it says, what I tell you, Clark Kent is bulletproof, like Superboy. And you can see, like, it's tearing into his red sweater and white shirt. And although we don't actually see splinters of the white shirt like we do the sweater. And he's whistling, and he says, perfect, they've fallen right into my trap. But yeah, so you can see the S logo coming up. This is a cover by Kurt Schaffenberger. And so I would actually... I wager that it is probably one where in which he inked himself, because people will remember that he, you know, he actually inked others quite often, and kind of brought a little bit of that Schaffenberger feel to other people's pencils as well. It's why it worked really well when he inked Kurt Swan, for example. It was just, that's the perfect blend for me. All right, and it also has, plus, The Boy of Steel's Strangest Encounter. Superboy meets Superboy. Almost. We'll get into that. All right, so on the splash page, we have Clark Kent running with his, without the sweater at all, with his shirt in tatters and open and revealing his Superboy costume. And the chief and someone else standing on the steps of the police station, kind of looking on in amazement as Clark Kent is running full tilt, chased by all the girls of Smallville. And Lana says, the rest of you parasites find your own boyfriend. I've always been Clark's favorite girl. And another girl says, not anymore, Lana. Clark Kent is fair game for every female in Smallville now. And someone else says, let's face it. That is an authorized let's face it. Nobody else has what he's got. That's right. Every girl in Smallville just wanted to be near him. Every other guy wanted to know his secret. No, we're not talking about Superboy. We mean Clark Kent, the grooviest guy in Smallville. And this one is brought to us as regular on this series at this point. Kerry Bates, writer, penciler Kurt Schaffenberger, inker Dave Hunt, letterer Ben Oda, colorist Jerry Serpy, and editor one Julius Schwartz. All right, so we start in Smallville, USA, on Maple Street. The calendar calls for a day of celebration. And it turns out that it is Lana's birthday. And what I love is they actually frame this exactly the same way they did in issue one of the series, which was showing us Clark's birthday. And so you get the... you know, you get the blowing out of the candles and you get sort of everybody around them labeled as to who everyone is. So we start off with, be sure to make a wish first, honey. Oh, Dad, that's just little girl stuff. Don't knock it, Lana. I wished for a motorcycle last year and I ended up with a convertible. And Lana says, on second thought, Pete, you may have a point. Okay, I just made my wish. And she blows out the candles. The occasion happens to be Lana Lang's sweet 16 birthday. And on hand for the festivities are some familiar faces. Professor Lewis Lang, Martha and Jonathan Kent, Police Chief Parker, Peter Ross, Mrs. Lang. I love that they didn't, you know, it's like Professor Lewis Lang, but Mrs. Lang, sure. and Bash Bashford. Right, but strangely enough, the most familiar face of all is missing from the party roster, that of the meek and mild-mannered son of Jonathan and Martha Kent, Lana's longtime friend and classmate, Clark. And we see why, because he's holding open his shirt to reveal the Superboy symbol. And he says, of all times for my super hearing to alert me to an emergency, right in the middle of Lana's birthday party. Aside from being the boy next door, Clark also happens to secretly be the mightiest teen on Earth. He says, well, at least everyone was too busy to watch Lana make a wish, watching Lana make a wish to notice me quietly slip away into the bushes. This job shouldn't take long enough for me to be missed. That sounds unlikely. And she says, was that a trace of disappointment that appeared? And we see Superboy flying by, and Professor Lewis Lang, because he gets a name, says, was that a trace of disappointment that appeared on your face a moment ago, Lana? You're not pleased with your presence? And she says, well, Daddy, I was hoping Uncle Phineas would be able to get back from lecturing at Metropolis University in time for my party. And Pete looks out the window. Look, up in the sky. He must have just noticed a Superboy, which is strange for Pete because normally he's trying to keep keep things on the DL. And Martha says, "Land sakes!" And Jonathan says, "Jumpin' Jehoshaphat!" And Bart Simpson wanders in and says, "I caramba!" Everyone's using their catchphrases. But we look, and it turns out in a fancy looking like an outlandish experimental plane. It is indeed Uncle Phineas. He kept his promise. And this is Professor Potter, who, again, would be popular in Superman lore later. And, he would, I believe he's also the one who, showed up in Jimmy Olsen a lot. And I think gave him the Gingold formula that turned him into Elastic Lad, which made him a Legionnaire connection. All right, so we see Professor Phineas Potter, and he says, I wouldn't think of missing my favorite niece's birthday. Besides, it gave me an excuse to show off my new experimental aerocycle. But before I forget, I have a special present for you. It'll be great help in your French courses. And she's, thanks, Uncle Phineas, but what is it? A miniature computerized language translator. Mark my words, girl. I predict by the 1980s, microcomputers will be as common as transistor radios. And she says, look, it says thanks in French. You're a wonder, uncle. And speaking of wonders, let's check in on the youthful cape figure streaking towards a certain towering skyline. Superboy says, I don't often perform super feats in big cities like Metropolis, but those faint residues of those ultraviolet vibrations even reach Smallville. And once I used my telescopic vision to zero in on the source, I had no choice but to suit up for action in spite of Lana's party. I'll say one thing, these big city crooks seem a lot more inventive than the small-time variety that usually hits Smallville. That vibration machine is emitting waves at the precise frequency needed to shatter the reinforced steel walls of that armored car, leaving everybody within range, including the guards, writhing in agony from the intense noise. And of course the crooks are wearing special headphones to make themselves immune to the racket. And he says, I'll put a change to that. I say, Superboy, we didn't figure on this. What's he doing in Metropolis anyway? We ain't waiting to find out. Plug him. Yeah, see? All right, take a drink. Hey, bullets really do bounce off him, just like his write-up said. And then he does a full-on drop on the vibration machine. It's his first order of business, knock the sound blaster out of commission, and then super breath to get those perpetrators off the street. Yay, I was once caught in a hurricane. That was a breeze compared to this. That's great. I like that. All right, so he knocks them into a fountain and then uses super breath to freeze them into the fountain. Says that ice bath will keep them in cold storage. So the Metropolis police arrive to cart them away. Now it's back to party time for Clark Kent. Meanwhile, Lana says, Pete, have you seen Clark lately? It looks like he's pulled one of his disappearing acts again. And Pete says, look again, Lana, he's right over there. Just back, I'm sure, from an emergency Superboy job. Longtime readers know, Pete Ross is a loyal friend who accidentally discovered Clark's super secret on a camping trip some years ago, and not even the Teen of Steel suspects that he shares his secret with a faithful ally. And all of a sudden, Bash Bashford starts choking on something. Bash is choking on something he swallowed. Somebody do something. And Clark goes up behind him and says, this calls for the Heimlich maneuver we learned about in health class. See, this harkens back to the old days when you always had the bit of education in the edutainment. And he says, first, you place your arms around the victim's torso, hands interlocking just below the breastbone. Then you press in to force air into the windpipe to dislodge the trapped food. And then it's time for Bash to have some fun. And he flips Clark over his head. Clark goes, and someone laughs and says, ha-ha, I call that the Bashford maneuver. And Clark says, oof, my super senses told me Bash was only pretending to choke for my benefit. So I was expecting to find myself on the receiving end of a bad joke. Gosh, the things I put up with for this secret identity. Not funny, Bash Bashford, says Lana. You know how delicate Clark is. He might have broken something. And he says, I'm okay, Lana. Just a little sore, that's all. Clark, say hello to my Uncle Phineas. Don't let those hooligans get you down, my boy. I had to endure the same sort of childish pranks when I was your age. But after amenities are exchanged, the shy but noble Clark has stirred some painful private memories. And Professor Potter's thinking, he says, that lad Clark is a lot like I was a teenager, rather non-physical and serious by nature, but obviously blessed with a superior intellect. Of course, when I was his age, I was already well on my way to honing the extraordinary scientific and engineering skills that would make me the brilliant inventor I am today. Unfortunately for young Kent, however, it's quite apparent he has no saving grace, no special ability to help get him through these trying teen years. I wonder if there isn't some way the Potter ingenuity can give that lad's life a much-needed boost while I'm here. So we shift over to Metropolis, and we have a guy having breakfast in bed, as someone says, not another one, Dalby. You heard what happened today with your vibro-gizmo you smuggled out of this visiting weirdo's lab. Yeah, that armored car was shattered into scrap metal, Mr. Morosco, but that means that Potter's experimental device delivered the goods. And Marasco says, and created so much racket that creep Superboy homed right in on it. Your janitor job at Metropolis U may give you easy access to this inventor's lab and all his toys, but I've already lost 3 fine street soldiers. He says, 1 minute's all I ask. This nifty little system is Potter's TV filing system. You insert one of these discs like this, and he's got basically like a record album size thing that doesn't look like it would actually fit in the TV screen. Anyway, he says, insert one of these discs like so, and presto, a picture with sound. Research item 4438, my oral repello capsule. Once ingested, it bestows upon the user an invisible protective energy sheath for 7 hours and 13 minutes. That is very specific. He says, as I myself am demonstrating, once the capsule takes effect, even high-caliber bullets are repelled at point-blank range. Marasco says, aha, now you've got something, Dolby. With those pills in their bellies, my boys can pull off the most dangerous jobs around. I never have to worry about getting plugged. And Dolby says, I thought you might see some possibilities. He says, okay, let's talk business again. How many of those pills can you deliver, and what's your price? He says, well, I happen to know that Potter's back in Smallville for a couple of days. So why don't we crash his lab and start negotiating? So the next morning, we see Clark walking to school. Professor Potter's hiding behind the bushes, and looks like he's putting something in an odd looking shotgun. Basically, he says, I spent the night working in my lab at home, working on this problem, and I finally came up with the very experimental formula he needs. After this highly compressed spray makes contact, it won't take effect for several hours. But the moment the solution becomes active, Clark Kent won't have to worry about being mistreated by his classmates simply for being different. I'll wager this will be one day that lad won't ever forget. Meanwhile, I certainly hope that birthday invitation from this Lang girl we found in Potter's lab turns out to be the right lead, Dolby. The date of the party was yesterday, Mr. Marasco. With any luck, he's still in Smallville. And you're still convinced that the missing repello pills are in his home lab in that tank town? Where else could they be, Mr. Marasco? Your men and I turned his college laboratory inside out without turning up a trace of those capsules. Then let's hope the professor can be persuaded to hand us his discovery over to us for safekeeping, or that pretty niece of his won't live to see her next birthday. Yeah, see? Little Ultra Dillinger for you. Several hours later, the lunch period of Smallville High. Let's not sit anywhere near bashing his pals, Lana, in case he decides to have another choke attack. Lana says, I can sympathize, Clark. I know how embarrassing it must have been for you yesterday. Yesterday? Clark, something's happening to me all of a sudden. I simply can't take my eyes off you. You're so magnetic. And he says, Lana, you dropped your tray. What's come over you anyway? Next moment, an inexplicable wave of bizarre behavior sweeps over the female students. He's mine. I saw him first. Wait, Clark, wait for me. And poor Bash is sitting there, huh? And another girl leaps over the table, saying, the Kent charisma is just too much to resist. And Lana says, the rest of you buzz off. Clark is all mine. Not anymore, Lang. Why should you have all the luck? Clark Kent is fair game for all of us now. May the best girl win. And Corky says, Bash, I'm seeing it. I just don't want to believe it. He says, same here, Corky. Every chick in sight is flipping out over Kent as if he was Paul McCartney. Gah, it's enough to make me lose my lunch. Bash Bashford isn't the only one who finds the situation unsettling. Great Scott, I don't even get this kind of adulation when I appear in public as Superboy, thinks Clark. And Lana says, Clark, don't run off. You're all mine, all mine. And another girl says, walk me to bio class, Clark. Another one says, I'll follow that irresistible hunk anywhere. And he starts running. And he says, the whole idea behind my secret identity is to stay dull and low-key so as to avoid attracting attention. Instead, the mere sight of Clark Kent is inciting a female riot. And he sees an open manhole, and he ducks down it. He says, until I can figure out what's happening here and why, I'm dropping out. And the girls are, Clark, don't try to hide. We just want to be close to you. Groovy, the shyer he is, the more he turns me on. And he sees a bunch of Smallville utility workers working down in the sewer. And says, don't mind me, fellas, I'm just passing through. Clark, don't make us come down there after you, but if we have to, we will. Mere heartbeats later, several tunnels away, where there are no eyes to gape at the world's mightiest teen. He starts stuffing his clothes to turn into Superboy, and he's thinking either some unknown factor has somehow warped those girls' senses, or somehow I'm to blame for their bizarre behavior, although I can't imagine how. Because you know his usual go-to would be like, it must be Red Kryptonite. But he flies out another manhole across town and says, whichever the case may be, this is one mystery I'd better solve fast. As long as my alter ego has this Elvis Presley effect on women, I don't dare put on my glasses. Meanwhile, we see the gangster's car outside a house, and he says, we know those Repello pills are here, Professor. Why not make it easy on all of us and show us where? Not a chance, you upstart. Those capsules will help policemen prevent crimes, not help cheap hoods like you commit crimes. This is Professor Potter, who was tied to a chair, of course. And they say, the guys are saying, there's so much junk here, we'll never be able to figure out what's what. We swallow the wrong pills, anything could happen. Moments later, he's a stubborn coot. Not even Muscle Man Bruno could get him to point out the pills before he passed out cold. And they've got Professor Potter unconscious in the back seat. He says, but thanks, this notepad we found, we know what our next move is. So I see. Lucky for us, the absent-minded professor found the need to write down a reminder to himself. Maybe this is why he came to Smallville, to test his discovery on a hand-picked guinea pig. And he says, the pill should still be working if he took it this morning, so what we've got to do is find this Clark Kent and then conduct a surefire test of our own. And he says, don't forget to administer a test dose to Clark Kent on his way to school this morning. Back at 321 Maple Street, the phone rings, and guy says, I believe you're acquainted with a Professor Phineas Potter. If you want to see him alive again, go exactly where I tell you, alone. This is over the phone, but Clark's already in his Superboy costume because, as we know, being Clark is difficult for him today. They say, you got all that, Kent? You're better for Potter's sake. And remember, any sign of the police and the professor is dead meat. And so Clark hangs up the phone and thinks, wow, first Clark has to put up with a bevy of swooning females chasing after him. Now he's being pulled smack in the middle of a kidnap caper? Mom, Pa told me there'd be days like these. So soon on a rural highway leading southward out of Smallville, we see Clark riding his bicycle. And the gangster's far behind saying, that's got to be him. He thinks we're waiting for him a mile up the road. He won't be expecting us to come up from behind. But Miss Morosco, what if the kid screwed up and forgot to take Potter's Repello pill? The bullets won't bounce off. Morosco says, as he chomps on his cigar, then I'll arrange for a nice wreath to be sent to the funeral. All right, Bruno, gun it. And so they do, and they basically pull a drive-by on Clark. Rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat. Excellent, Dolby, right on target. Knocks the heck out of Clark's bike. And they say, it must have hit him with at least 24 slugs. 29 to be exact. His bicycle was shredded up like so much tinfoil by your devastating barrage. And yet our unsuspecting guinea pig is still alive. A bit shaken and bruised by the fall, perhaps, but unscathed. The bullets never got further than his clothes. That's what I call bulletproof. Golly, I don't understand. I should be dead. Don't play the innocent routine with us, kid. We know all about your friend Potter and his magic little Repello pills. We also asked him around town about you and found out what a timid milksop you've always been. Damn. He says, I figure your professor pal gave you a stash of those pills to protect you from school bullies. I don't know what you're talking about. But although the face of Clark Kent reflects abject fear, hidden behind the glasses are fast-thinking Kryptonian wits. Luckily, my super hearing picked up enough conversation from the approaching limousine to deduce what these thugs were expecting to see. Since they're so convinced Professor Potter gave me some pills that made me bulletproof, I just let my invulnerability shine when they open fire. We not being able to help you, or to harm you, Kent, but I'm calling the shots as long as we got Potter stashed away. Now talk, or else. Says, all right, you win. The professor did give me a small supply of the Repello pills. They're in my pocket. And the guy says, now you're finally wising up, kid. Put them in a pocket-sized aspirin tin so no one would suspect the pills were anything special. And he thinks, actually, this is an ordinary aspirin I carry around for my, quote, I have a headache routine when I need to switch to Superboy. On orders from their boss, the two crooks greedily gulp down two of their wondrous pills as a sly Clark plays along. I've lived up to my part of the bargain. Now where's the professor? It's for us to know and you to forget about, you jerk. Wow. No honor among thieves, right? As the trio quickly piles back into the limousine, discarding the mild-mannered team behind. Turn north when you hit Route 101, Bruno. Now that you and Dalby are unstoppable, I know just the place to test your Repello power. I wonder where that is. All right. It turns out it is 37 miles north of Smallville. Off State Route 101, Camp Telford, a top-secret U.S. government, or top-security U.S. government base. I'd say probably the big signs saying what it is make it less than top secret. An installation in a state of turmoil at the moment as a red alert alarm blares across the base. And so we've got soldiers, you know, blamity blam 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 at the two guys. And they say, never seen anything like this, sir. We're putting enough stopping power to demolish a house. Keep firing. That's an order. Our bullets still keep bouncing off. And we see the two guys running. And it's like, but wait a second. We know that they only got aspirin. And they say, far out. I know how Superboy feels, but nothing can harm him. Turns out, Superboy is flying above them in a super speed circle and using his super breath to knock all the bullets away. He says, speaking of the Team of Steel, perhaps this pair wouldn't be quite so arrogant if they knew the true reason for their so-called invulnerability. As long as I keep moving faster than the human eye can perceive, no one dreams it's me and my super breath really deflecting those bullets. Firepower won't bring them down. Maybe brute force will. Henson, Martell, incapacitate the infiltrators hand to hand. With pleasure, sir. And two of the soldiers go running in, and they can't get through because, again, it's like hitting a wall of steel, and it is. Invisible intervention to the rescue once again, thanks to super speed. And as the untouchable duo emerges onto the government grounds, they won't survive another 10 feet. The colonel has ordered the hidden minefield to be activated. You got a minefield on the premises, but I guess they can control when it's activated. The lead sheathing on the canisters will protect the plutonium from being detonated. Dang! To the shock and amazement of the military, we see, like, you know, all these clouds kabooming. Take a drink out of the ground. Incredible. They're walking through the blast without a flinch. I thought only Superboy could pull off a stunt like that. And since the name came up again, let's reveal what no one else on the scene can see. The resourceful Smallville sensation, again concealed in action. Each time Dalby and Bruno trigger off a mine, I place myself on top of the blast and let my invulnerable body absorb most of the damage. The explosions up above ground are only the smoke clouds left behind. After more super help enables the thieves to pass through the electrified base fence unharmed, it's like taking candies from babies in uniform, Mr. Marasco. Bruno and I never even felt a tickle. This plutonium raid is just the beginning, boys. Let's pick up Potter and head back to Metropolis. As soon as we force the professor to mass-produce his pills, we'll sell them on the underworld market for millions. Mr. Marasco, I like the way you think big. Meanwhile, Superboy is talking to the base colonel. He says, thanks for holding back, Colonel, and ordering your men to put up just enough resistance to look convincing. My pleasure, Superboy. I know you'll bring those felons to justice as soon as they lead you to your kidnapped friend. Soon, in a deserted section of open countryside. And suppose I refuse to produce my Repello pills for you rodents. You'll cooperate, Professor, or that pretty little niece of yours becomes our target, and she ain't bulletproof. And we look atop a rock, and there's Superboy saying, hi there. I hate to hit you with an old cliche, but it's the end of the line for you. Superboy? So what's to worry? Bruno and I are still untouchable, thanks to the Repello pills. Go ahead, Superboy, give us your best shot. We'd love it. And he does. He says, how's this? And he clonks their heads together. And then Potter says, allow me to do the honors with the ringleader, Superboy. I've been saving this up all day. And he punches him with a great big clonk and knocks him out. So later that day, in the Lang backyard, he says, I still can't figure out what went wrong with my charisma spray, Clark. It was only supposed to fascinate the opposite sex, not overwhelm them. He says, don't feel bad, Uncle Phineas. Or Lana says, don't feel bad, Uncle Phineas. You don't see Clark complaining, do you? Clark says, Lana's right, sir. It was kind of nifty being the most sought-after guy in Smallville, even if it was only for a few hours. Nifty? Clark, nobody says nifty anymore, and she thinks, sigh, he'll never change. And then they wave goodbye to Professor Potter as he flies away. And say, bye, Uncle. Don't stay away for too long. I want Lana, and when I get back, tell Superboy I hope to see him again. Who knows? Maybe I'll invent something just for him. But what do you invent for a boy who already has everything? And it says, next issue, see if you can guess the secret the time forgot to tell. On sale December 24th. It's a date. All right, so that's the main story. Second story is written by Bob Rozakis, penciled by Jose Delbo, inked by Joe Giella, Milt Snappin is the letterer, Jerry Serpy the colorist, and Julia Schwartz, editor. This is Superboy Presents Strange Encounters of the First Time. Superboy meets Superboy, almost. And so Clark's kind of daydreaming in class. He says, everybody in class is really looking forward to next week's vacation. Some of them are going to the north to ski, others south for a sunny holiday. But as Superboy, I can have the best of all worlds, even ski down the lava flow of a volcano. And he envisions himself doing exactly that. And the teacher says, now, class, your assignment for the vacation is as follows. Each of you will write a report on a historic event as if you were an eyewitness to it. That means you'll have to research the event fully and be prepared to talk about it as if you were really there. But, Miss Hart, it's a vacation. If you work quickly and efficiently, you'll have plenty of time for vacationing, Lewis. Each of you will take a slip of paper from this box telling you what your special event is about. And Lana says, ooh, I've got the assassination of President James Garfield in 1881. What did you get, Clark? And he says, something not as violent, I hope. My assignment's more recent than yours, Lana. I have to cover a manned spaceflight in 1962. Why, that's a cinch. Since it was only a few years ago, you'll find plenty of newspaper and magazine write-ups about it. I'll bet you even remember watching it on TV. I sure do. He says, yes, Lana, I remember. He says, but I've got a better way to do my research. So, after the school day ends, Clark gets right to work on his homework assignment. And he says, I could read up on the spaceflight, but I'd rather get a real eyewitness report by traveling back in time as Superboy. Cape Canaveral, here I come. And off he goes, flying back through the time stream from 1966 through 65, 64, 63, and 62. And traveling at faster than light speed in a clockwise direction. That's important. That's a different thing. All right, so we've seen him. He's turned into a phantom, of course. And so this will, I guess this is where that kind of all got explained. I think it had been around as a concept for a while, but here it gets actually explained. There's Cape Canaveral and a Mercury Redstone on the launch pad. But I've got a, I kind of wish I had Michael on for this one. He says, I've got a better view of this than even Walter Cronkite. Uh-oh, a last-second foul-up as the countdown happens, and liftoff. He says, one of the engines isn't firing. Without it, the rocket will crash. Looks like I go from watcher to rescuer. But to the Boy of Steel's surprise, he passes right through it. He says, great Krypton, I'm passing right through the rocket like a phantom. But why? I've always been solid before when I time-traveled into the past. Maybe my heat vision can ignite the engine. Can't make contact. No way I can save the rocket. And then he realizes, he says, there, in the sky, I can't believe my eyes. It's me. Superboy, a 10-year-old me. Oh, that's important. So 1952 then. So, yeah, you know, again, we're like Superman just shy of 30. He says, what is he doing here? I'm flying into the non-functioning engine, replacing ignition with a super strength lift. At least that Superboy is solid enough to make contact with solid objects. He's moving so fast, he can't be seen by anyone but me. Come to think of it, no one around here can see Phantom me either. I kind of feel out of this watching him do my job. The rocket's falling away. The capsule's going into orbit. Well done, Superboy. Sure wish I could pat myself on the back. Maybe if I get close enough to him, his supervision will be able to... Huh? He's suddenly speeding groundward? What's he spotted that I haven't? Breaking into that TV broadcast trailer. No problem for this Phantom Superboy to follow suit. So he heads down and he watches the whole thing. And he says, I have news for you, comrade. Your sabotage mission was a failure. It's the so-called American hero Superboy. Irk. Our superior weaponry will turn him into a dead hero. Blamity blam blam blam. Bullets bounce off and 10-year-old Superboy says, it doesn't matter which side of the Iron Curtain bullets come from. They still don't hurt me. What your boss is printing Pravda about me is lies. I am not a hoax. So, and you will spend a lot of time in an American prison remembering that. And he knocks him out. Shortly after Superboy has watched his younger self deliver the saboteurs into the hands of the FBI, he tries to make contact again. And he flies in front of him, and young Superboy flies right through him. And he says, even though I'm a phantom, his super senses should detect me. Hi there, it's me, you, from 4 years in the future. No recognition. Oh, so in this, Superboy was 14. Yeah, I mean, we know that most of them are around when he's 16. But I think there's a bit of float to it, for sure. He says, evidently, it's impossible for him to be aware of my presence here. Otherwise, I'd remember meeting a 14-year-old me when I was 10. And speaking of remembering, I don't remember ever saving a rocket that misfired here when it was taking off. And yet I just watched me doing it. Maybe the answer to all this is the 10-year-old Superboy isn't me. And yet he's flying into my bedroom in our house in Smallville, changing into Clark Kent just as I did when I was 10 years old. There's something about time traveling I just don't understand. Not even scratching my head in bewilderment helps solve this. There's nothing to scratch. Well, that's true. Everything about this room is exactly as I remember it being when I was 10. And Martha says, Clark, are you busy? He says, just doing my homework, Ma. She says, then you'll be happy to take a break for some milk and fresh baked cookies. Mmm, Toll House, my favorite. And Clark and Phantom Clark thinks, mine too. One thing's for sure. I'm not going to solve this puzzle hanging around to watch myself eat cookies. So it's back to 1966 and work on it from there. At the other end of the time trip, it's good to be back home and solid again. And he tests this by knocking a branch off a tree. Way to go, Clark. In his room, the solution is not any closer. He says, one thing's for sure. My easy way out on the homework assignment wasn't one at all. Thanks to what happened, I'm doing more research on that space launch than I ever would have done as a normal student. I now know every detail now that was reported. And there's not a single mention or hint about Superboy doing anything to save the flight from disaster. Nothing about a non-firing engine, nothing about enemy saboteurs. I believe the whole thing was some kind of hallucination, except for one thing. I've probed my super memory to go over everything I did the week of the space flight. I can remember every detail of the day before and the day after, but nothing about that day. It's not even an entry in my diary about it. Why? Why, indeed. The answer will startle you, Superboy, and you too, readers, next issue in Superboy's Secret Mission. Now, special bonus here, folks, because... you know, I hate to leave something. It's been, it's been about 13 weeks since I did another Superboy thing. So I can't just, leave you hanging on that. It's just rude. So give me a second and I'm going to bring up issue 27. We're just going to do the eight pager from there. Because again, it would be just rude. So I'm literally going through and grabbing this so that we can get that story, because I didn't realize it was a two-parter. Some of those backup features were. Oh, yes. Okay, so when we look on the cover of issue 27, they've got, Superboy locking a couple of Kryptonians in a kryptonite cage, but... down in the bottom corner, exclusive, Superboy's mystery mission for President Kennedy. So that all makes sense. All right, so we'll go straight to that story. So, and this one again, it is Jose Dalbo is the penciler, Rosakis is the writer, Dennis Jensen is the inker, and it does look decidedly different. Shelley Lefferman is the letterer, Jerry Serpy the colorist, and Julia Schwartz the editor. And so he says, this is incredible. I traveled 4 years into the past and watched my 10-year-old self save a Project Mercury spaceflight from disaster, but I can't find a single shred of evidence anywhere that it ever really happened. And what's worse, I don't even remember doing it. Puzzled reader, not as mystified as the Boy of Steel as he searches for the startling secret of Superboy's mystery mission. He says, who would have thought that a homework assignment would lead me to such a bizarre mystery? I had to write a report about that spaceflight as if I'd been an eyewitness to it. So what better way to do it than by cracking the time barrier and actually watching it? But it was like a Chinese box puzzle. Once I materialized as a phantom, unable to touch anything, then I saw my younger self save the mission and capture some saboteurs who had tampered with the rocket. Yes, I saw it, but I find myself unable to believe it was I who did those super feats. So, he says, I'd file it all away as a weird dream or hallucination, except for one thing. I've probed my super memory, and I can't recall a single thing about the day I did on the day of the flight. Not even a diary entry. It's possible that exposure to kryptonite made me forget, which means my mind probe array might solve the mystery. It's helped me recall events that occurred when I was a baby on Krypton. So he sits under the ray. He says, a clear picture of everything I did the day before launch and everything the day after. The day of the flight is like a blank tape, as if it never existed or was erased. And he gets up, cursing the sky. He says, why? I won't rest until I find the answer. So, only one way to clear up the mystery. Return to the same day in the past. And so he does exactly that. And he says, maybe I should have asked Mom and Pa about this. Now I'll have to wait until I get home. He says, okay, I'm here. From just before dawn on Mystery Day 1962. One thing hasn't changed. I'm a phantom again, just like on my first trip, so nobody here will be able to see or touch me. So he basically watches himself. He gets up and, you know, gets himself some cereal for breakfast. And this is getting off to an unusual start. Hi, that is Clark. It's getting his own breakfast. I guess Mom and Pa are still sleeping. Wrong guess. And there they are. They're up and they say, what are you doing up so early this morning? He says, today's the day of the big space flight, Ma. I got to watch the blast off on television and write a report about it for school. He says, oh, yes, you told me. Now here, go turn on the TV and I'll cook you up some pancakes. And he says, talk about history repeating itself. I have to write the same report my 10-year-old self did. And with the countdown at T-minus 57 minutes, we pause for this, for a message from him. He sees the signal lamp go off and he says, his X-ray vision spotted the lamp blinking on and off. It must be either Chief Parker or President Kennedy. And he says, signal lamp, Ma, my telescopic vision shows the president wants me. Which is, land sakes alive, it must be terribly serious. And so he flies off and lands in Kennedy's office, and Delbo and Jensen have done a good job of capturing the former president's likeness. And he says, whew, that sure was fast. Superboy, I'm not even going to try and do the accent, okay? You know, he says, Superboy, I've received word that our nation's enemies may sabotage today's Mercury mission. I'd like you to keep an eye on it and make sure the launching goes off as planned. Certainly, sir. Seeing Superboy on the scene should scare off any potential saboteurs. Oh, that is some nice, nice alliteration for Mr. Rosakis. And he says, no, I don't want you to be seen at all. Our space program is a symbol of American know-how and technology. I don't want it to appear we need a guardian angel helping it along. You'll do what you have to do undercover. He says, whatever you say, Mr. President. And Clark says, well, that's one mystery solved, why there was no report of my involvement in the launch. Then, as if watching a rerun of a movie, the Phantom Boy of Steel watches his younger counterpart again fill in for the non-functioning robot engine, etc., etc. So we see all the stuff we saw last issue. So it's curious, even though I've been here once before myself, I'm watching myself, I don't see another me. So he doesn't see the other Phantom. He says, I guess my Phantom self is intangible and undetectable. That clears up another part of the puzzle. Nothing in our universe can exist in two or more places at the same time. That's some good physics thinking, Clark. He says, it would be impossible for me to meet myself. That means whenever I travel to a time, future, or past, when I am alive, I'll be a phantom. He says, now I'm writing my report on the flight. Maybe I should memorize and rewrite it back in my own time. And he just knock on the door, and Ma comes in and says, Clark, are you busy? And, of course, brings the cookies, et cetera, et cetera. He says, Toll House, my favorite. And Clark says, mine too. He says, this is where I cut out last time, but now I'll stay for the end of the show. He says, Clark, is this the paper you're going to hand in about the space launch? And he says, sure, isn't it great, Ma? I got lots of information on that none of my classmates could possibly have. I'm sure to get an A. She says, and you're sure to give away your secret identity. There's no way Clark Kent could possibly know the things you've written about. Only Superboy would have that knowledge. But Ma, no buts, Clark. You have fairly used your superpowers to give you an edge over your fellow classmates. It's like cheating. What you've done is wrong, son, in more ways than one. I want you to put any further notions like this out of your head and never think of them again. Okay, Ma. I guess I really blew it, huh? Yes. Now, rewrite the paper based on the film of the blast-off you'll see on tonight's TV news. He says, gosh, I really got Ma steamed at me that night. Unless I'm wrong, that's the missing piece of the puzzle. My younger self is using super self-hypnotism to wipe out, because it's super self-hypnotism, to wipe out not only the memories of the space launch, but everything else that happened today. He says, evidently, I did such a good job on myself, nothing could bring those memories back. Speaking of back, I should be going back to my own time, or rather forward to my own time. Strange how this turned out. Twice I used my superpowers to outdo my fellow students, and twice I learned the same lesson. Using my powers for personal gain is wrong. Oh well, it's back to doing research on the Project Mercury spaceflight as if I were just an ordinary student. And here's an interesting note, and this will tie into something we're going to cover probably next week. Maybe not, because I think we're going to hit a couple of things before we hit the block at Origin. Couple of things that we've kind of left out there. Anyway, the Superboy Christmas story appears, a special announcement, a Super Baby Christmas story appears in the current Superman family issue, number 216. And it says, starting next issue, the backup story in Superboy will be Dial H for Hero. So I'm again, I haven't really done the math on this, but if Superboy started with 259, so 26, this would have been I can't do math today. Good grief, Paul. So 265 and 285. So we're getting into the Levitt's run here. So of course, as we know, Dial H for Hero appeared as a 16 page. See, I need to have more coffee when if I'm going to do a morning episode. But basically, it started in Legion 272. Because it was the block origin issue had the Dial H thing, and you can bet we're going to go through that as well, because seriously. And so it had, by this point, completed its, so that would have been like 12 issues in. Yeah, so I guess it had a, you know, it had its run in Adventure, and then it moved to Superboy, and I didn't realize it happened this soon, though, so there we have it. I will, and yes, I will be doing the Dial H things in future Superboy Chronicles because I love that stuff. All right. So that's all I got for today. Comments, as always, are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can join in the conversation on our Facebook page, facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. We are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. And in addition to all those things, you can head over to our website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, where you can leave a comment on this or any episode. And with that, we make our way back into the time bubble, and we will see you all next week.